Okay.
And I think you might have mentioned some of the sponsors. We have some conference sponsors, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about these folks. Frank Hughes is the regional sales director for Flatirons Digital Innovations. And I've known Frank for many, many years. He's been a friend of mine for a long time. FDI, as they call themselves, is a member of all four of our.
Can anybody read lips?
Yeah,
I'll take over.
Okay, go ahead, Melissa.
Yes, Frank is actually with Flatirons Digital Innovations, has been a member of all four of our chapters. And Frank, I'm sure you've seen him around as he really honestly tries to make all of these luncheons. What Linda was saying is that now more than ever, FDI provides an essential service, and due to our dependence on using technology in order to keep our safe distances, of course, we're concerned about crashing our systems, which I think is funny that we're talking about crashing systems, and her system is crashing today, and she's still reading, I just want y'all to know. So, and this is true. Is all about making sure that the data is safe, and they specialize in archiving data to a consolidated repository. We have two more sponsors. We have Dave Smith with IMEG Corp. Now, Warren was with IMEG in Dallas, but he is now retired. Woo-hoo. There you go, Warren. Dave Smith, I think I saw you on here. Dave Smith is the executive principal and client executive at IMAG Corporation. Now, actually, Dave is based in San Antonio, but they are members everywhere but Houston. Makes me sad, Dave. IMAG Corporation is a...
Maybe next year, Melissa.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
IMAG Corporation is a full-service engineering firm with offices throughout the U.S. It is in the top 10 of largest engineering firms and have managed projects all around the world. A major industry focus is healthcare. IMEG is an HCT member. Oh, I said this. I'm reading from Linda's script, but you can see my brain already went to that you're members of three of the four chapters and that you have offices in San Antonio, Austin, and Dallas. I'm serious. Like, you got to come here. Dave heads up the Texas operations. And see, she says you're based in San Antonio. So I don't mean to repeat, but we're going off the script now. And our last conference sponsor, Deborah Bauer, she's the founder of Drake Commercial Group, and she is one of Linda's dearest, dearest friends. She's widely respected as an exceptional commercial broker and developer, having been responsible for some of the largest multi-use developments in San Antonio and the surrounding areas, including Austin. Coincidentally, she and Dave Smith office in the same building on Loop 1604. Well, and Linda says once they can leave their homes. I don't know if any of you have had an opportunity to join us on some of our mini conferences before, but actually they are really turning out to be some really fantastic opportunities to meet some of our healthcare leaders and experts. We've had them as speakers before in some of our locations, but having them available on these mini video conferences has been like a spectacular experience. I'm really enjoying it. And anybody can join in right from the comfort of your own home. It's kind of about snack time or tea time at 2. Our next one has been, and they're all dealing with how kind of our areas, maybe not just healthcare related particular, but kind of businesses, personal healthcare are dealing with the COVID-19 crisis. But our next mini conference will be on Tuesday, the 21st. And we have Yvonne, and I don't know how to say Yvonne's last name. Do you know Malcolm? No, I don't. But she's with Texas Medical Association. So she's going to be with us on April the 21st. And those invitations will go out first thing tomorrow morning. And just FYI, just so y'all know, and we're trying to limit the chaos with so many of these online conferences that we are, as soon as one speaker is done, then we send the next invitation out. And that would be so that we can everybody, we're trying to keep all the ducks in a row. Just image in your mind, ducks in a row.
Is
Linda back?
Yeah.
Yvonne Monkhound or something?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Ryan.
N-O-U-N-K-H-O-U. Yes. Yeah, I've met with her before.
Yeah, so she'll be with us on the 21st. So, Linda, I got all the way through the sponsors and with our next mini video conference on the 21st, and I'll give it back to you to introduce Philly. Not working. Okay. You know what? I'm going to back up for a second because I when Linda started freezing and her mic was going out, she would have introduced myself. I'm Melissa Murray. I am based out of Houston. Linda and I've had a virtual relationship for almost 5 years now. And so she and I are used to doing this kind of stuff. We don't ever do Zoom, so we don't see each other. But I certainly am email buddies with most of you. I've only been to one San Antonio luncheon and one North Texas luncheon. But yes, I'm the person that you get all your emails and things from. I also want to introduce Malcolm. He's already talked to you about kind of our Zoom etiquette, about muting and things like that. So that's kind of our team. And Linda keeps going on and off, and I apologize that she is having computer problems today because we did do a dress rehearsal yesterday and everything was beautiful. It was perfect.
Always works like that.
I know, it's crazy. Like it all, yes. So I actually, Felipe, I want to turn this over to you because I would rather you tell the story about how you and Linda connected through Pat Riley rather than me telling Linda's story. So if I can turn this over to you, I will say Linda in her notes says that she met Felipe about a year ago through a mutual friend. He introduced Linda to Ramon virtually after we went into quarantine. So actually we've only met Ramon virtually, any of us. Right. And she has asked Felipe to tell us a little bit about himself and to introduce Ramon Coronado. So Felipe, if you'll take over.
Absolutely. Well, hello to everyone. I'm Felipe Vasquez. I'm here in San Antonio, but originally from Mexico City. I own two companies, Home Caring. This is my office right now. We are an essential company. We provide caregiving for seniors and disabled people. So we continue functioning more than ever. And I have the company for 15 years. And I also have Vasquez & Associates. There is a distributor company that we take innovative American products and take them to South Asia and Latin America. Having the experience of more than 25 years working with seniors and disabled people, one of the things I learned was basically things not to do. And one of the most common factors, it was always after 40 years, working for the same company, I have so many regrets. I should try, I couldn't, I tried, but I decided that I didn't want to be like that. So I learned from my own patients, from my own clients. I said, you know what? I'm going to have the opportunity to retire and go around and visit countries. The wall is beautiful, it's big. So that's exactly how I started doing it. So I had the chance to meet a lot of people, and by accident, I don't know, by fate or whatever, I started meeting a lot of people in the medical field. I went to Indonesia, Philippines, Panama, Colombia, all over the world. And they were always with the same idea that we need American products. So when I came back, that's one basically the idea of bringing those American innovative products to the rest of the world. For example, in Indonesia, 80% of the medical devices, they are made in China. and they love American products. So they say, whatever you can bring to us, that will be wonderful. So with Pat Raleigh and my sister Laura Vasquez, we decided to open Vasquez and Associates. And that's what I've been doing in the past couple of years, besides my home caring business, that's my baby. I met Ramon 7 years ago, not through healthcare, but the funny thing, through my wife, that she's a flamenco dancer. And she invited several times Miguel Vargas. I have to say, for me, my humble opinion, the best flamenco dancer in the world, phenomenon. And happens to be that Miguel Vargas is the cousin of Ramon. So a couple of times we had the chance just to talk over dinner, we became very good friends. And I have the privilege to say that Ramon is one of my best friends. So I met him in outside the healthcare. And when he was telling me all the things that he was doing, I said, wow, I need to learn more. You have to tell me, you have to teach me everything, because I was absolutely amazed. His conversations, they were fascinating. I said, okay, Ramon, just please talk to me like I'm 8 years old, because he was like way over my head. But Ramon, being so humble, he's been just a wonderful friend. So anytime I had the chance to talk to him, I learned so much. So to me, it's a privilege and honor to introduce Ramon. So Ramon, please take over. You're the man.
Well, thank you for the introduction. Thank you everyone for being here. So this is a situation in which I don't like talking about myself too much, but I think it's important for me to tell you a little bit about the blessings and the serendipities about my journey and how I got to the point that I'm right now. So I'm gonna start telling you a little bit of the background of who I am and how I got to this point. Then I will go back and give you some slides with a little overview of the science of what we're doing, and then move from that to just questions and answers and try to figure out what people might be wanting to know more. So everything started for me. I'm from Venezuela originally. And while I was in Venezuela, I'm from what I like to call the Texas of Venezuela. It's the South, it's plains, it's cows, cattle, and all that. So I grew up in a family of pharmacists and healers and all these things. And I moved to the capital to do polymer engineering. So I'm an engineer by background. And I started working with materials that you can implant into the body. So what materials or plastics or molecules can you put inside of the body? And that opened up my passion for medical applications and translational medicine. As you can imagine, after getting my engineering degree, I was very limited about what I could do beyond what the country was offering. So I decided to just move and apply to the best country in the whole world to do these type of applications, Texas. So I moved to Texas and to start my master's and my PhD. And the blessings of Texas, besides the things that you obviously know about the weather and the economy and all of that, is San Antonio has a great biomedical engineering program. For those who are not familiar with the process of PhD, it's essentially you have to find a job depending on different professors, depending on the projects they have available. You apply to that job, and then that's how you become an expert in that specific field. But San Antonio has a unique, beautiful synergy between different institutions that allows you to pretty much go and create your own project. So that's what I did. I just talked to a few professors in different entities, and then they decided to just allow me to create a project. So I started working on my PhD with the Health Science Center and the Transplant Center and with the Army Institute of Surgical Research. So I was working for the Army and working with the Health Science Center during my project. While I was there, I would do a lot of animal research. So we were trying to care for pigs, essentially. They have models of burns and all these applications for the military. And we started using stem cells. to help these animal conditions. So the beautiful thing was that I got the chance to see how these technologies were improving in helping animals. And at that point, I was like, well, if this is helping pigs so well, why are we not using this to help pets? And I'm a big animal lover. I have dogs. And then I was like, well, can we do this on animals? And that's why I jumped into start my first business and try to help animals with stem cell therapeutics here in San Antonio. And of course, we have unlimited experience. It was a small operation. It went very well. Like, animals were getting better. And the beautiful thing about animals is they don't have a placebo. They don't get that sensation that they got better because they got an injection. So it was very important for me in my career to just see and observe what was the feedback coming from the animals and their indications. Now, all of these backgrounds are important to you because there's a moment that changed my life forever. And then while I was working in the Army, doing research in the basement, I got a call on a Tuesday afternoon. Like, the majority of things are unexpected comes in a call on the Tuesday afternoon that you're not waiting for anything. And I have a friend who says, hey, I have someone who is really interested in the work that you're doing with animals, and they wanted to know a little bit more about, they want to pretty much pick your brain as a consultant. Do you mind talking to him? It's like, no problem. Where is he located? And they told me, well, he's in Houston. And I was like, sure, he's a friend of yours. I can just go to Houston, no problem. He's like, well, can you fly there? It's like, yeah, of course, absolutely. So I fly to Houston. I don't know who I'm meeting. I want you to please imagine this for a second. That you get a call and they tell you, hey, can you go to Houston to talk to a friend? They need some help. And I was like, sure. I'm walking down the stairs at the airport. I have a team of policemen holding my name on a little board. And fear pretty much takes over me. It's like, what did I do? I'm legal here. What's going on? I'm like, and the police is like, no, we're here to pick you up. So essentially, I get into the car and then I get into a mansion. And that was the moment that changed my life forever, because I get to meet a billionaire, Lester Smith, and who is a wildcatter of gas and oil. Some of you in Houston might have heard of him. And then I didn't know who he was or what he wanted. But after 3 hours of talking, we clicked very well. We became very good friends. And he told me, hey, Ramon, I've been waiting for someone that I want to work with to do medical research. I have donated millions of dollars to the hospital, to Baylor, University of Miami. I love medicine. I love research. But I'm a little bit disappointed or not very happy about the bureaucracy components are and the overheads of bigger institutions that doesn't allow science to move forward the way I want it. So he will always say, well, if I like a researcher and he needs $1 million for getting from point A to point B, I need to give him two because all the overheads and things don't move as fast. Would you be willing to start something with me? At that moment, I realized he was scouting me out of the Army and he wanted me out of everything that I was doing to start working with him, which is a crazy idea. And of course, I said yes. We shook hands and then I came back with a whole different lifestyle, life purpose and job. He told me, of course, move to Houston. I'm like, no. to the point where I'm like, okay, I love San Antonio. I like San Antonio very much. I think all the things that I can do for you, I can do them in San Antonio. I don't need the extra traffic. And that's how we started the Lester Smith Medical Research Institute. And that's how the majority of the bigger part of my research life started. And I'm telling you this because it's important to understand a little bit of what science and the business of science is. I like to say, think about Iron Man, for example, the superhero in the Avengers. It's not that he was the smartest guy. It's not only that he has more funding than the army. It's just that the capability of pivoting is the lack of red tape to really move science forward. So for traditional academia, in science, you get a budget for a project that you propose. But if this is expectations of 5 years, 3 years, and so on. So if something along the way is different, you cannot change, you cannot pivot. You need to stick to your idea. Now, think from any other business point of view, you give a projection of 5 years and you stick to that plan and you cannot change it. You could imagine how that's not a very, very good idea. Having the support from Lester, he said, you have unlimited funding, go pursue your science and pivot whenever you have to pivot. We need robust, real science that make a difference for people, and we're not gonna just cut corners on that end. So sometimes we'll be $500,000 in on a project, and then I was like, Lester's not working. It's improving a little bit. I can make it look like it's doing a big
thing. That is a pellets pack.
And then we will pivot. We'll be like, no, if it doesn't work black and white, I don't want it. Let's move on. So that was pretty much the research that we did for 5 years. Unfortunately, Lester passed last year, last March. And by the end of last year, the family just say, hey, we don't know anything about medical research. Why don't you just have all of it and just keep going with it, with what we have discovered. Get all the IP, the equipment, and keep doing the science. With Lester, we were not up for profit, so we never care about doing business. It was more about the science. But now we're Crown Scientific with all the same background assets and technology, trying to just take advantage and commercialize those technologies that we have developed. Everyone, remember, you can just chat if you have any questions. At this point, I'm gonna just move and give you a little bit of a presentation of sorts. So you know who we are as Crown Scientific, what we're working on in the laboratory. Since we tried to do a virtual laboratory, but then the camera thing is a horrible idea. So I'm just gonna give you a little presentation on that end. So can anybody see the slides?
Yep, we can see him.
All right, perfect. So this is Crown Scientific. Referring back to Miguel, to Felipe and how I met Felipe, this is my cousin Miguel Vargas. He's the flamenco dancer. And he was here trying to just teach some flamenco classes, and that's how I met Felipe. This is a picture of Lester and Sue Smith and their animals and how they're passionate about animals and medicine and how me being involved with their family changed my life, not only because of the opportunities, the financial opportunities to do science, but because of the discoveries we made while we're working together. In addition, he showed up in a moment in my life where it was very stressful because I was about to graduate. My student visa was gonna be gone right after that, and I needed to figure out a way how to stay in the country after all the training that I've done. So this was a great opportunity where he said, I'll take care of all the paperwork and everything that you require for you to stay here legally and get everything done right. So that was another big impact in my life. So anyways, we moved and we decided to stay in San Antonio, Texas, and the beautiful Texas. And we are located right now at the San Antonio Technology Center in the Medical Center. For those who are familiar, we are close to the Health Science Center. And then at that point, we're like, okay, how do we set up a laboratory, Lester? I've never done a laboratory. I was like, well, are you willing to do it? Absolutely. Let's try to get it done. I'm going to try to give you a little perspective. If you have an idea or you have a laboratory, what would you do? Let's say, for example, your dog has a tumor in his skin. And all of a sudden you see your dog chewing on a little plant in the backyard. And a month later, that tumor is gone. Let's say you have the thought, well, you know what? That plant could possibly have helped with the tumor. And that's how hypotheses are created. How do you go from that observation to demonstrating that maybe that plant has a drug in there that can help with cancer? So the way that you set up a laboratory for that is you usually have to simplify the problem. Imagine this for a second is a human or an animal. And then you want to talk about a tumor in the skin. So you have to simplify the problem from the organ, the system, tissue level to cells and molecules. So you normally on research, you start at the most simplistic way and then you add complexity as you move along. So instead of trying to get dogs with a tumor, you might want to extract the tumor and use the little cells of the tumor. and evaluate the behavior in the presence of the plant. Similarly, that's how you set up a laboratory. So the laboratories are usually are specialists in different areas, and they have the expertise on the chemical level, cellular level, tissue level. Some have organoids, system, or they work directly with humans. So in order to do that, our laboratory setting essentially is what you look over here. This is some pictures of the laboratory. This area, what is called a wet laboratory, it gives us the capability to work all the way to here, from 1 to 3, from molecules to cells to tissue level. But once you have a discovery there, you're like, okay, you know what? This plant that I was using the extract for my dog, is actually doing something on the cancer cells that I saw on the skin and on the skin where the tumor is implanted in there. So normally what you do at that point is that you move into a more complex organ or a system. In the majority of the cases, you have to go for an animal model before you move into a human. In order to do that, once we have the discoveries on this wet laboratory, now we also build an animal facility. It's called a vivarium. And what you do is, like, over here you can house about 400 mice at the time. The reason why you do mice is not only because they're like a less sentient animal, but also because you can have the disease at the same time, you can control the disease progression. Let's go back to the example of the dog. Let's say your dog had a tumor, is chewing a plant and it got better. Well, how can you get all the dogs who have the same tumor, excuse me, at the same time? So that's how you have that evaluated in the laboratory. Once we set that up, then we are off to the races to do it. Now, when I met Lester, we knew a lot of what mesenchymal stem cells were doing, but then some of the main clues I'm gonna show it to you here is, okay, what are the stem cells good for? Originally, 20 years ago, it's like, oh, they're becoming something else, they're stem cells. But the clues that we base our work on was based on an example like this, for example. So sorry for the graphic components of this image, but this is a cat that has what is called stomatitis. It's an inflammation of the gums. And this cat was about to be intubated. The doctor told me, look, we try steroids. We try absolutely everything we can. This cat cannot eat. It cannot function anymore. So we don't have any other therapeutic available. Why don't we try and use what is called something like stem cells, a stromal vascular fraction, and see what happens? Because there's a good evidence that we can control that inflammation. And 2 weeks later, this cat was what it looks on the right. The inflammation was gone. They didn't have to intubate the cat anymore. And it was eating by himself. So we're like, okay, we have good evidence. And this is just a representation. The cells are very good at controlling chronic inflammation processes. When you have a lot of inflammation in your system and you cannot stop it, then this seems to be a very good therapeutic. So at that point, we're like, okay, how do we simplify that problem in the laboratory? How do we evaluate that? So I'm gonna give you a little crash course on immunology, and I know it sounds scary, but this is what your immune system does to your body. This is how it is created. So your immune system is a bunch of soldiers that are trying to protect you from foreign things. So on the left, you have the innate immunity, which are the rapid force. These are the Marines that are in the front. They see something moving, they're gonna shoot for it because they're at war. And on the right, you have another immune system. There's the slow response, which is the government and the Pentagon, and the people are like, having to think a little bit longer about strategy and the logics of it. So what we did in the laboratory, we recreated these systems and we were able to test what the cells were doing. So by doing that, we have the opportunity to really measure what we were doing as we were moving along, if the therapeutic was working, how it was working, what system it was doing. Am I just getting the guns out of the army, or I'm just like blinding them, or am I just removing their radio communications so they cannot bring more reinforcements? Those are the type of things that you have want to control of the immune system, and you have to have a strategy for it. We decided also to work with the placenta tissue. And for those who have the the understanding of the beauty of birth and pregnancy will understand that for women having a pregnancy, you have half a foreign individual inside of your body. This is not a splinter they just got on your little finger. You have a half foreign entity inside of your body growing faster than any other tumor, depleting you from resources, yet you don't have an inflammatory response. So we were trying to leverage that shielding of the immune system from the placenta in controlling the immune system. So we focus what we were doing there. And then once we figure that out, there's a lot of science in here that I'm not gonna bore you with. So essentially we figure out a way of extracting some of those important molecules, and we were able to treat the animals. And then just as a picture for the data, boring data, is when you treat the animal on the left, it just retains the hair, the inflammation goes down, versus when you don't treat it and the inflammation takes over the body, it's a very deadly condition when you don't treat it. So then we move to some of the pilot studies that we're doing, and we're doing some pilot studies on eczema using this extract of sorts. We're doing an eczema trial. We're doing another trial on tendinopathies. So when you have a tweak, how many of you have a tweak in your back, in your shoulder, your elbow, your knee? Right now, your only options are steroids. When it's not bad enough for surgery, the only thing you can use is steroids. So we're trying to replace that in having another product that can not only reduce inflammation, but promote your regeneration. Steroids are very toxic. You cannot use them very often, and it does not help your body to heal themselves. So with this strategy, what we're doing is giving you something that not only calms the inflammation, but allows your body to regenerate. And I'm showing you only the pictures of the eczema because the pictures of the tendons are boring. In some other cases that we are going to be doing some pilot studies and are on chronic inflammation systemically, like COPD. So currently, as an inventor, Crown Scientific, what he does is creates new ideas. And what we want to do is, once we have these ideas validated down to a pilot study, we're going to move forward and create entities that take that technology forward. So right now we're having a company that's doing this cell extract that has a therapeutic effect. And right now we also have another product that I'm working with Felipe is on an anti-aging product. Because when I was working with Lester, I will get people from the family be like, hey, can you generate something that is powerful enough to really help us with our beauty? Because that's also an important thing. I was like, yeah, absolutely. So we developed, after various iteration, a product that it was very good for age spots. So here you can see the lotion that we have created. On the left, you have someone that has sunspot damage, has been having that for many, many, many years. And after 2 weeks of application, those sunspots were reduced. So now we're trying to use that technology for creating another company to work on that realm. And with that, I'm done with the presentation. I didn't want to bore you too much on the, let me just go back to, with the science. And
okay, I'm on a telephone. This is Linda. And Ramon, I'd like you to talk to us a little bit about we've made this whole April series about what we're doing in the area of COVID-19. Are you involved at all in that?
Yes, that's a great question. Thank you, Linda. Yes, we are involved. So we've been working heavily on, before the COVID-19, on pulmonary inflammation and pulmonary fibrosis. So something that happened with COVID-19 is what is actually killing people is the chronic inflammation. So once you get the virus, there's one strategy that is controlling the virus itself, reproducing, and that's gonna take time. That's the vaccine. The other one is on controlling the inflammation. So your lungs get so inflamed that pretty much you cannot breathe anymore. And that puts a lot of pressure on your heart, and that puts a lot of pressure on your kidney at the same time. So we have an IRB-approved trial to use this cell-free extract that has the anti-inflammatory properties that we have found, and we are ready to treat 20 patients. So this is an external IRB, and now we're looking for collaborators in Texas. Hopefully in San Antonio, we can get some leads for clinics who will be want to be part of that trial. Once again, the IRB is an institutional review board. They give you the stamp saying, yes, you can go ahead and do a trial, and we're doing that. But now we're in the stage of dealing with clinics like Christus, Methodist, Baptist, and trying to figure out who wants to be part of that trial. Some of the difficulties that we have found so far is like, well, sometimes we're a small company, so they might think that they're not, they want to be dealing with big pharma and not necessarily with a small company. But we're keeping trucking, we keep trying and knocking on doors to see. The pulmonologists, the doctors are very interested in welcoming this, because the options that they have for controlling inflammation has been toxic. And actually the World Health Organization is advising against using those steroids. So they don't have a lot of tools in their toolbox to control inflammation at this point. So that's what the pulmonologists are very excited to be trying this trial, but we're having some pushback from administration or directives in that level. So we're definitely involved in wanting to help people at this point. Yes, so I'm looking on the chat. So mesenchymal stem cells are showing very, very good outcome for this, what is called acute respiratory disorder. Essentially, is the inflammation that happens in the lungs. So there's a few companies that are working on it. They have INDs. Pluristem in Israel has been showing very good results. There's a group in California who's also showing good results under an IND. There's some papers published in China as well. So what we've developed here in the laboratory is like we can cause the same immune regulatory effects of the mesenchymal stem cells, but without using the cells. What we did is essentially we found how these cells are working. We do that in the laboratory and make an extract. And that extract is causing the same immune regulation. The benefits of it is you don't have to have the vial frozen. You don't need to be going on a transfusion with a higher risk of having an inflammatory response. This is a cell-free product, stable at room temperature, can be shipped everywhere. It's much easier to use. So that's some of the benefits that we have instead of using cells. So we have access to people, and we have the stability testing done so far. They can be stable at room temperature for like 4 months so far. Now think about it as there's a case where back 40 years ago, I think 50 years ago, people with an anemia will have to eat raw liver to recover from that anemia. So they were chopping chunks of liver, eating it, and that's how they were able to recover from that anemia. Eventually took a bunch of scientists to extract the active component of the liver that was helping with anemia, and that's vitamin B12. So the extraction process is something that hasn't happened in the pharmaceutical industry. What we're doing is similar with the placenta. So they have immune regulation, mesenchymal stem cells do immune regulation, what we do is an extract. I have some other questions over here. Is it an exosome product? So no, it's not a pure exosomes. All the liquids, pretty much all biologics have exosomes in it, but this is not a pure exosome product. And I'll tell you why. We thought originally it was exosomes and we isolated the exosomes, but the phase that didn't have the exosomes was doing the same thing. So it's not exclusive therapeutic effect from exosomes. So we're able to actually have a better therapeutic effect without having to just have the exosome. It's more than just exosomes. Ramon, there's a variety of companies pursuing similar products and solutions. How are your patent protecting your work to justify commercialization? So we're working with Baker Donaldson. We have a company that's watching our six when it comes to all the legal protection to make sure that we have everything buttoned up. And that's one of the initial stages before doing all the commercialization stages. Have you talked to with Texas Biomed leadership yet? They have expertise in TB and other respiratory diseases, are going numerous trials regarding COVID-19. I have not talked to everyone. I would love to have those connections. It's important. It takes a village. Let me put it this way. So I'm covering the science. We have the pulmonologists, but also there's a lot of administration, legal, and politics involved with moving these things forward. And one of the challenges, like, well, when you're like, kind of like a, I'm not the president or the chief of a huge institution, then sometimes it's hard to do all the things at the same time. Ramon, I was one of the kids who had to eat the liver chunks. Oh my God, Todd. So yes. So you didn't have to eat the whole thing. Now you can get a B12 shot. That's essentially what we're trying to do here. Is, hey, we found how it works. It takes a lot of time and work, and that's what we did with Lester. We were chasing for those molecules. We're chasing for this cell-free opportunity. And after many millions of dollars and many years, we finally found it to at least create one strong immune regulation component. And like I said, cell-free, we have done patients in Ecuador for COPD, and they're responding very well. After one day, their lung function recovers.
Wow.
So we have a lot of data that we have done as a pilot study, but now we're like formally trying to get into the FDA. Hopefully we're gonna have some meetings starting next week with the FDA regarding INDs. We're just trying to be strategic, because as a platform technology, think about this as a steroid, a regenerative steroid. Now you have a regenerative steroid, how can you business-wide target the best angle? So you have tendinopathies, osteoarthritis, are we gonna go lupus, multiple sclerosis, COPD, cardiac inflammation. We have antifibrotic data on cardiac inflammation. So we have data in a lot of different things in different animal models, because we have a lot of collaborators. What we are asking right now and trying to organize ourselves into the what specific INDs are we going to go for. So far we have two indications that we're going to be pursuing. One of them is local injections for tendinopathies, because those people are responding very well. So they can even tell, we're taking people that have tendinopathies in both elbows. So it's called bilateral. So we have a placebo in our therapeutic, and after 3 days are like, I know what the placebo is. It's so obvious. I mean, this one is completely fine and the other one is nothing. So that's one of the applications that we're going to be doing. And for the systemic application, we were thinking before the COVID hit us to work with COPD. But if COPD seems, if we have an opening to work on COPD, we're probably going to be going for COPD. Heather, I am collecting information on what San Antonio bioscience companies are innovating to address COVID for tonight's KSAT broadcast and future broadcasts for biomedicine. Please send me info. Absolutely. I would love to do that, Heather. Jane, just in case you eventually need a scale-up support or therapeutic, Jane Cure, one of our subsidiaries, can support you. Thank you so much. I'm working with some of the local companies over here. They have tissue bank. They're already processing things. And that will be definitely our first stage of manufacturing. But I am very proud of our GenCure BioBridge organization here in San Antonio. So I'm pretty sure that we were like significant enough, we can partner up and make this much bigger. And again, self-introduction, Texas Biomed. Okay, I'll tune in. I'll definitely put it on about the town hall. I actually got the invitation yesterday, and I talked to I sent an email to Velocity Texas, which is where the information came from, about like, hey, how can I partake? How can I help? I know a lot of people in the panel today are going to be talking about how to attack the virus. So the expertise of the people that are on that call, the majority are on viral. How do we create a vaccine? How do we create that? But what is killing you right now is the inflammation. So I have, unfortunately, I lost an aunt to coronavirus already, and I have two friends are being in a very bad shape in the ICU. And I know, I've been talking to doctors, and I know that the inflammation is what actually is shutting down your body. It's called a cytokine storm. What it means is these cytokines are molecules. These molecules are so inflammatory. Imagine that you have been stung by a million bees. So the inflammation is so big that your body shuts down. That's what is eventually killing you. Let's see, Wendy, Ramon, with stem cells apply intra-articularly, what usually happens is that the cells have systemic effect and end up improve both joints. Not only that one that was injected, does your product show the same effect? Wendy, I am familiar with that trial, where that happens. We have not seen that happening on the elbow tendinopathy. And that could be for multiple reasons. But it could be a matter of dosage. It could be a matter of biodistribution. But even with intra-articular injections of the knee, only one is getting better. We have seen downstream improvement. Let's say if someone gets injected on the elbow, some people have reported improvement on their joint arthritis from the finger in the hand. But we have not seen anything going from one elbow to the other one. In the placebo for the cells that were injected on the knee, that could be a matter of distribution, or the dosage was high enough that it can reach the other knee, or the power is so minimal compared to placebo that you can barely see a difference. So you didn't see a difference. I don't know how that study was statistically analyzed. Let me put it that way. But we don't see, if we put an injection in one knee, the other one is not getting better. Amnion-derived cells also show improvement. Yep. Yeah, do it help calm down the inflammation? I think your product. Thank you, Wendy. Wendy is asking you that, or saying that amnion-derived cells also show improvement in ARDS, and I think MSCs are their immunoregulatory effect. Do help calm down the inflammation. I think your product sounds very exciting, safe, effective, and hopefully avoiding the concerns the FDA has expressed. Yes, Wendy. So I work with one of the leaders of that field is Ornella Parolini. And I worked with her, and she actually worked for Lester Smith. We brought her as a consultant, and she's in Italy. And we work with people in Sweden and the experts of that field of immune regulation. So yes, they have a strong immune regulatory effect. I'm talking about black and white immune regulation. And the uniqueness of it is that it's not toxic. So we took tendons from monkeys, and then we give them the top five of the line steroids that people use in the clinic right now. We kill all those cells with the steroids. They're very cytotoxic. For those who go to the doctor and get those shots, they tell you, you can only receive this once every 6 months because it's very toxic. So with our product, you can continue using it because there's no killing of the cells. You're actually promoting the cells for regenerating and healing. So those are some of the benefits of what our research have found so far.
Linda again, what kind of competition do you have? Are other people around the world doing this kind of science?
So that's a good question. That I'm aware, there is a lot of people trying to do the cell-free products through exosomes, but I don't think I have met anyone who has worked the problem from the basic science all the way up. So let me give you an example. Some people will have I have exosomes, I use the exosomes. Exosomes are doing something. But no one has identified why they do it and how they do it. We identify that early on with the mesenchymal stem cells. And by discovering how they work, we maximize what is secreted, and it's important. To my knowledge, there's no one who has so much data on a cell-free product. Let me put it that way. And out of all that data, I take exosomes from the companies. I'm taking amniotic fluid from companies, and I test them in our models, and I test them in our animal models. And none of them have performed significantly or robust as what we have. Let me give you an example. There's a commercial product that is a fluid. It's a cell-free product. Cannot tell you the brand, but essentially it calms the rate, the immune system. Let's go from 100% being super inflamed to 80%. So it's a 20% reduction. There is a benefit there, but our product is completely going from 100% to 5%. So and you're talking about a huge difference because we understand why they're working so we can make it better out of it and the mechanism of action, how it's being produced. I don't know anyone who is working on the same strategy. Let me put it that way. We all trying to get the same type of product, which is a cell-free, but the strategy to get a cell-free product is completely different. Heather Hans, what is the timer for the launch of your product? ASAP. So we already are probably incorporating the company. It took me a little while to get the team together. So right now we have selected a team and hopefully we'll do signatures and everything in a week or two. So that's our plan for it. And for the pilot studies, we're still working on it. On their IRB, we have collaborators with doctors that are doing these trials. They keep working on it. We're still doing the human pilot studies. For the tendinopathies, we have 50 people going on. For the COPD, we're hoping to start soon here in the States. We have done it in a different country. And we're trying to evaluate which will be the best strategy. The COVID-19 is in an IRB that we have approved. So if we can get that data, you will see the improvement within a day or two and see if it's working for this indication. So if we get that opportunity, we definitely have to rush even more when it comes down to the regulatory. But thankfully we have a great team of very experienced people in policies. We have one of our team members is in DC, heavily involved with the politics and policies that are going through the FDA and the Department of Health. So we hope to be able to move fast if it's working, but we need to first see if we get the chance to work with the hospitals here. Otherwise we have to go outside of Texas, and I'll much prefer keep trying hard to keep it here in Texas.
So what is your timeline, do you think?
For the COVID?
For commercializing this. Do you have any idea?
Yeah, we're hoping to be less than 6 months already being all buttoned up, patents, manufacturing, and the legal team assembling everything ready to go.
Wow.
For at least of the local injections. For the systemic, we won't be able to commercialize it right away, but we'll definitely be applying for the INDs inside the formal trials.
Wow.
So it's a lot of regulatory stuff that we have to go through.
Anybody have any questions?
Yeah, Gretchen, will you be able to help with COVID before the 6 month you just mentioned? Yes. So for the COVID, we were supposed to be starting on Monday, one of the clinics, and it kind of fell through on the last batch due to one of the directors thought that we were a small company and then they didn't want to deal with that. We went through the whole IRB agreements, the doctors went on board. We have all the insurance and cover and everything. So last minute kind of dropped because of that, but we're ready to go. So the dosages are already there. The clinical protocol is already figured out. So if I have a clinic who is interested in doing it, we can start it right away. That's for the COVID.
Any questions?
Thank you, Annie.
I think this is very exciting.
Wendy, what hospital were you working with had the pulmonologists and intensivists seen the data? I cannot mention what the hospitals were, but the pulmonologists and intensivists seen the data? Yes. So all the people that are in the trenches are on board with it. So pulmonologists have no problems. Intensivists have no problem. Usually doctors are the skepticals, but then I have enough science and to show them and go through those things. It has been all administrative that we might see people being very slow or not interested. We're working with a pulmonologist who is the principal investigator of the protocol, and he has more than 30 years of experience, and he's very excited. And when we talk to pulmonologists and intensivists, they're excited too because they don't have a lot of tools. Right now, they're actually desperate. I have calls from doctors in Italy when everything was starting. It's like, can I please do something? And it was like, well, I'm sorry, I cannot export it. I don't have the permits for it. So the hurdles at the moment are, I will say, is more bridging through people and getting to the right person to wanted to do it. I think that's the biggest hurdle right now. I'm a small team. We have very powerful individuals, but we don't have everything covered. I think it's more a matter of like, okay, what institutions would like to do that? But we'll keep trying. I mean, and COVID is something that I'm also very interested in helping people. It's very sad that while we're waiting for a vaccine, what are we gonna do? Cross our hands and just wait for a vaccine to come over? It's just kind of hard to just not do something about it. And Lester had a pulmonary fibrosis, and that's how most of the work was related to pulmonary inflammation and fibrosis. And that's what we were working on. So I know how hard it could be to just not have the capability of breathing.
And so Ramon, this is Melissa. Just real quick, because you talk about working with the hospital, that one hospital or clinic mm-hmm. in San Antonio, I assume like even through Lester's connections in Houston or, you know, we talked about Roots the other day. I'm sure you have more connections in other cities or other hospitals. And Ann Stevens, obviously being somebody who just said, let's get together mm-hmm. with Biomed SA leadership. Do you obviously you've had other conversations and, you know, it's about meeting the right people. Yes. Are there other hospitals that you've talked to?
Yes. So I am, to your first question, to Lester's Roots, yes, I talked to the head of the pulmonologist at Baylor, which is the person I work with closely, and mm-hmm. he moved a month ago to Tennessee. So he was like, oh, now I'm stranded because I don't have anything that I can do for you here. So that has been one of the issues. We're still exploring, and then the pulmonologist is the one who's doing most of the legwork with the hospital because I don't know that landscape as well.
Right.
So that's one of the things that's his job. And we have a few leads. I mean, I have some appointments with the UT Health as well, but then some of the institutions, they mitigate the risk saying like, well, are you a phase 3 clinical trial with mm-hmm. all the mechanism of action figured out? I'm like, no, I mean, we're a smaller company. It's a research product. I mean, we know it's safe and it has a chance. And some institutions, rightfully so, might say, well, we're not willing to take that risk. And I understand that. But that's what we're working on right now. And this is a very unique situation for hospitals, for everyone. I mean, even for the FDA, they're giving approvals for things that normally will never happen just because there's a great need. It's based on the need that we're just trying to push this, and it's unusual times. So when it comes out to risk and bigger institution taking risk, it seems harder to do in that sense. I have another question for Novico. Would you be willing to work with other countries to accelerate the process to avoid all the red tape with the FDA and US politics? I am willing to help anyone that we can help. Let me put it that way. This is about helping people in whatever they are. If we can help people, I will be more than happy to do that. In terms of the FDA, we're going to have to do the whole thing in IND. I'm fine. But if we can help people, I feel that's my responsibility, is to give all my effort to help people in need. So I'm definitely willing. Frank Hughes, disappointed they're not going through the trial. Exactly. We have to do something. Yes, absolutely. This is a part of the navigation of working with technology, and that happens with many other fields too. Hey, I have a cure for something, or something may be good. You have to overcome several hurdles, which is part of the process, and we're here doing that battle. But I think it's exciting that we have so many opportunities too here in Texas, and us coming up with solutions to problems, honestly. I mean, I know there's some other people in different states in the call, but then I think that we're a very proud state. And to be like, hey, you know what? We have the opportunity to not be waiting for a savior to come from somewhere else to help us out. It's us working together. It's us doing it. This is a matter that involves all of us. This is our problem, and we are all trying to solve that issue in whatever way possible, from staying home to connecting technologies to make it happen. So I think that's a beautiful thing that I've seen in the community and that I love about being in this community.
One thing that I know, and Stevens knows him very well, but Tom Kowalski at the state level in Austin, we've had him speak at two of our healthcare think tank meetings, and he is head of the Healthcare and Bioscience Institute. So he's got some really strong connections, and we can certainly put you in touch with him.
That'll be wonderful. Thank you.
Ramon, there was a question from Annie Doyle in the chat that says, is there a certain coalition that could bring your work to the forefront? Obviously, that goes along with what you were talking about, and Linda.
I think that I don't have anything in mind of a coalition. That's what Linda mentioned. I think that's a perfect answer. But the coalition is us, even us here in this call. The blessings and the serendipity of how things happen, since my journey starting in Venezuela out of all the places, is what I'm impressed with. You don't know the next day who's going to call, who's going to be there for you, or what result of an experiment will happen. They can change your life forever. And that's why I wanted to tell you an example of how things happen, from Felipe knowing Felipe through my cousin who dances flamenco, to all of a sudden an animal lover who wanted to do clinical research, and then we partner up with a handshake, and after $1 million that we're here. So it's the beauty of it. It's the beauty of all being involved. And you might think, oh, there's not much I can do, but everyone can do something. And sometimes it takes just a phone call or an introduction, and the whole thing explodes and moves forward and changes your life. So that's the beauty of talking here. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to just talk about my life. which I don't often like to do, but thank you so much for allowing me to do that.
Ramon, how many people are on your team?
For this,
reference your team, how many people?
For this cell-free product, we are six people. So we have a manufacturing expert. So we have a manufacturer expert, we have a policy of health expert, we have the legal expert, of course, there is a BC, but he's a medical regulatory expert. We have a consultant that is bouncing between being part of the company or not, who was on the higher ups of the FDA, and she was just called back from the FDA. She retired and she was going to join the company. Now she's being called back to the FDA. But she's still going to be consulting with us. And then I take care of the science, and we have a medical director as well. Tamara, do you still have the funding needed to continue to move this forward? Yes, funding is always needed through all the stages. We have, thankfully, we have a team that can do a lot of it without funding, because we're set up for those capabilities. For example, I can do a lot of research here without spending too much. The manufacturing expert can manufacture, do the validations and all those testing without incurring into a lot of cost. But when it comes down to helping people, it's gonna be costly. Just to give you an example, at cost, dealing with a 20 people trial is like $80,000. That's at cost. And hospitals are doing that right now with the COVID-19. They will be like, you know what, this is a special location. But then in order to be strategic, a submission for the FDA is in the orders of $250,000. Getting the package is about $300,000. So it's definitely happening. And there's always a chance to need money, especially when it comes down to applications. So for example, we have passions for different diseases, and that's something that also drives it. But if someone comes over, it's like, hey, I'm passionate about this disease, can we explore it? Well, we need the funding for that. But if the funding happens for that specific disease, we'll definitely be able to pursue it. I have another question here. Do you expect chronic diseases like ulcerative colitis to require long-term course of treatment versus a condition like COVID possibly requiring short-term? That is an excellent question. I'm actually more comfortable with colitis just because I'm more familiar with chronic inflammation. And with chronic inflammation, it's fascinating in the sense that every person might react differently. We've seen chronic inflammation being reduced and not needing anything else once every 4-6 months. Or some people that need just a little push from their body, a little bit of help, and they go a year without having to need another treatment. So definitely the COVID-19 is about survival at this point, but it's not the only issue. A lot of people are recovering and having a hard time with, they're having cardiomyopathy. So essentially their heart pumps so much because of they need to oxygenate more that it becomes the extends and creates a lot of fibrotic tissue. It scars. So that's a chronic inflammation problem that goes afterwards. Their lungs is the same thing. They get a lot of scar tissue inside of the lung. So later on, we're gonna be dealing with those problems. So it's important that at this point, the COVID-19 is taking care for their survival, but there's gonna be an aftermath as well. All right, let us know when you begin reviewing activity assay to gather the information on the mechanism of action as well. We're here for you when you need us. Thank you, Adrian, I appreciate it. We have a, definitely the more the merrier when it comes out to functionality. I actually talked to BioBridge because we developed what is called a potency assay. So when you develop drugs, you wanna see, hey, is this batch that I manufacture potent enough? And we patent those things. So we have the capability of evaluating the potency of every batch that is being manufactured. So we have that in our hands as well. And that's one of the things that we develop in order to measure, is this good enough? Because when it comes down to cells or things like that, it's like, how do you make sure, and this is more boring for you guys, but in the manufacturing world, you have to validate that every batch that you produce is active, has the potency that you claim it has. So, Adrian, I'll definitely get back to you to see if there's any complementary assays that we can develop or activate. So,
sounds good.
All collaborations are great. And the more that we know about therapeutics, the better it is. There's not always one answer and that's it, we're done. No, there's more exploring, more knowing. And this might sound silly to you guys, I don't know that, I'll share it. But essentially, I got involved with a lot of people who are in the cell manufacturing world. So big companies, all the guys are like the Panama clinics and then China and Germany. And these guys have all the mesenchymal stem cell thing figured out, pluristem. I talked to a scientist and everyone. So when I hop in the boat, when I started jumping on it and be like, hey, I want to be like you guys, I soon realized I'm not going to compete against you. There is no way I'm going to be competing in making mesenchymal stem cells to your level and show, well, mine is a little bit better than this and that. So our goal was like, okay, assuming that we have a mesenchymal stem cell that works perfectly, what is the next generation look like? What is the next thing is gonna be looking like? And that's how we focus our energy into creating the next version of it. Imagine for a second that this technology does exactly what stem cells do, mesenchymal stem cells do, then you don't need mesenchymal stem cells anymore. So it becomes an obsolete technology versus a cell-free product. And that's how we put a lot of effort into seeing if it was feasible or not. It was a big gamble, and it did not work for over 2 years, I can tell you that. And when we were about to give up, serendipity once again happened, and voila, it opened up. Leslie Brennan, have you spoken with Steve Lowe, president of DFW Hospital Council, hospital councils? No, I have not, Leslie. It will be great to be in touch with them. Yeah, and we have already like the package, the protocol that has been IRB approved, and we have already have the consent forms and things like that. So any person in the hospitals who might be interested in it, we can share those and let them decide if that's what they want to pursue, if they want to be part of it.
Involved with, we can definitely get you involved with Steve Love.
Perfect.
Ramon.
Yes.
How do you get some of your medicine?
How do I get what?
How can I get some of your medicine for a relative?
That's a tricky question. I'm sorry, but for right now, we cannot do it outside IRB. We can talk about to see what condition they have, and if it fits under a trial that we can do, then we can talk about it. Right now, we don't have commercial freedom.
I see. Okay.
That's too bad.
Yep, but that is the hard part for me specifically is when someone's like, hey, my mother, my in-law, my friend is suffering. Can you help me? And you're like, no. And that is a really hard part for me because and that's why I kind of want to move it forward faster because I want to help people, give them options. It's part of what is done, what it needs to be done as well. But it's doable, and there's hope. There's all the strategies. We've done the research. We've done our work, and it's just a matter of keep going. It's a complex problem. It's a complex journey. For you to get a drug that helps you, it's a long journey.
Sounds like a puzzle.
I don't like things that are easy. Can we solve cancer? Let's try. Can we solve an incurable problem? Let's try to fix that. So that's the beauty of good challenges. They're good challenges. And I have family, like I mentioned before, with COPD, and that's one of the reasons why we decided to do it. And we're able to help a family member in Ecuador. So for me, I'm like, okay, this is very fulfilling. This is what I want to do now. Give the opportunity to others.
This is so exciting. By the way, the person who asked if you could help the family, somebody in the family, he's a doctor too. So you might be able to work something out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you have my contact information. If not, Melissa and all I can share that. Feel free to be in touch. I know how those difficult times are, and then there's usually always solutions to do it. Some of them take a little longer time or not, but we have been able to solve all those issues most of the time. If you have a doctor in the family, expectations is something that is important. We walk you through the whole thing. We do a trial, and then sometimes it can be done a one-person trial.
Gosh, could you be an answer to arthritis? Yes.
Yeah. So,
wow.
The osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis. So we have done knees, elbows, systemic, multiple sclerosis, traumatic brain injury, COPD, asthma, case with nebulization, and they're all having very good outcomes. But these are pilot studies. So this is for identifying what is the big thing we're going to go after with the FDA under an IND. So they're all people that try everything else and nothing helped, including the eczema. It's like this person went through the doctor to the expert, gave them everything possible. So I usually get to see or hear people are like, hey, I try everything, nothing is working. I'm out of all the options. What do I do now? It's a treatment.
And the reason that you would use the tissue instead of cells is because they are not alive.
So it's neither a tissue or a cell. It's a biological extract. So think about it's orange juice instead of orange of sorts. It's an extract or tea. Think of a tea. So it's not the leaves. It's now the extract of those components. It's a little more complex scientifically than that, but in essence, that's what it is. Annie Doyle is, could you clarify if this is a treatment or a cure? It is a treatment. So the majority of these conditions can be treated, but they're not cured. Some of them are because genetically are there. And most likely you will need multiple treatments. The only difference is depending on the person, the treatment might vary. For example, it's not the same thing that a 10-year-old has a partial tear of a tendon versus I get it or someone else gets it. So sometimes that becomes chronic, it never heals. Like that twig that I'm pretty sure we all have that twig, right? this shoulder is always there. It gets a little bit better, but it's always there. That, after 20 years of that, if you cannot replace it, you don't have options. So this sometimes helps enough to you never have need another shot, depending on the person. But in essence, it's a treatment.
Okay. Hey, all right. Ramon, we're just about out of town, out of time, but maybe one or two other questions, and then we'll call it a day. Here's Larry.
If nobody has a question, I do have one. Went back to the product that you're working with Felipe on about the lotion, that's a beauty product.
Yeah.
But are you also, I was thinking when you said eczema, my aunt has horrible eczema on her hands and feet, and it's getting worse and worse and worse, and we're always looking for like a lotion or something. I assume that you could eventually, I guess, move over into like that department as well, or that, you know, for you were talking about the different diseases that you're treating, but would you be able to do that in a lotion too?
We're working on it.
Okay.
I don't know if it will work or not, but we're working on it, because essentially eczema is one of those chronic inflammation. So inside right. your skin, you have immune cells that are hyperactive and starts attacking the system. So we're right. working on it. For the lotion, it was not necessarily a bright idea or anything like that. It was just a matter of different worlds united. So for the lotion, what we use is an active ingredient, which is the food that we use for feeding stem cells. So if this is good enough for feeding the stem cells, it's good enough for feeding the stem cells of your skin. Just as simple. It's nothing too brilliant. And then when we started using it, we're realizing, yeah, it's working pretty well. So, and that's how the lotion is taking its world. Interestingly enough, and then Felipe might be comment on that one too, people who have psoriasis or chronic inflammation of that sort, it seems to be reduced. Inflammation seems to be reduced somehow.
Wow. So. We have one more question from Leslie Brennan in the chat.
Yes. And over the counter. Are the skin treatment products prescription strength or over the counter? Prescription strength or over the counter? It's over the counter. So that's something that we're working with Felipe to start commercializing ASAP. Formulation is over, it's done. So it's a product that is ready to be sold and shipped, and it's over the counter.
So where did we get it? Where did we get it? We'll talk to you, Felipe.
Yeah, and that's one of the part of the village that you need, right? I mean, as he's focusing commercialization of that, we'll use some of those funds to keep doing the research, to keep feeding all these other stuff. So that's the business model of getting some capabilities of keep doing the research.
Right. One of the things I had to thank you, Ramon, for the opportunity, is basically right now we're designing the packaging and marketing plan, and we'll be launching very soon. So we're talking in a few weeks.
Yep.
So keep in touch and we'll do it. It's very exciting. I mean, I've been trying the product for 3 weeks and I have seen a difference. We have 5-6 people at the same time and the results, they're remarkable. I had to share with you, Ramon, I didn't have the chance before. One of employees has an eczema really bad in the neck. In 7 days, it's gone. And I'll send you the pictures. It is dramatic. It's not improved, but it's dramatic. So it's like, wow. So yeah, it's very inspiring.
That's exciting.
And for Melissa, in your case of eczema, does it help with eczema? We cannot claim those things, because then at the moment that we claim it, FDA goes in and now it's a medical product. So we would like to keep it over the counter. So you guys figure out and call me and be like, hey, could it help for this? And I can let you know. But that's part of the business of science, the translational science component that is so important. I see a lot of it's that bridging of the basic science to commercialization. It is a long bridge. And there's a lot of languages, a lot of things. And Anne has been great since the beginning with her program to help and navigate those waters and encourage people to do it. Because also you can imagine for basic academicians, they're not, when you jump into the business, you're like, oh, you're branded as as the bad guy. How can you sell that? This is horrible. So, but Annie and her program has been wonderful in helping us crossing that bridge as well, including. So, thank you, Annie.
Keep up the great work.
Okay, it's 1 o'clock now. Ramon, thank you so much. I think everybody is excited, and we're so many of us, we're not used to being involved from the beginning on through something and looking and saying we knew that when. And so thank you. It's really, really exciting for all of us. And I think you will change the landscape of healthcare. I believe in stem cell, but having something that is goes a step further than the ordinary stem cell is amazing. So, Tamara, I can see you like it, huh? Hmm. Yeah.
Thank you very much to all of you. I appreciate your time.
Felipe, thank you so much. And that's all.
God bless. Okay. Thank you.
And we can keep you in touch with what Ramon is doing, everybody. So we'll be back in touch. And don't forget, next Monday or next Tuesday, we've got a mini conference, and it's going to be on at 2 o'clock. And then we also have one on Thursday. And then the last week, we have Tuesday and Thursday mini conferences at 2. So we don't know if this is going to go on in May. Perhaps it will. We'll have to see where we stand. But we just hope to be able to bring you some valuable and interesting information. So have a nice rest of the day and rest of a week.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Ramon. Bye. Thank you, Felipe.
Thank you.